All rise.
The Evan Bray Show. The Round Table of Justice.
Welcome to Monday Morning. Every Monday at 10 o'clock, we do this. We break down for an hour and we talk about a topic, an issue that is often very relevant to maybe a current case or cases in the province. Maybe it's an area where lots of people want to call in and ask questions, which is quite often the case when we do, for example, our traffic safety segments. And we will do one of those coming up before Christmas. Good time of the year to be thinking about traffic safety. Of course, street checks, road check stops will be out in full force through the holiday season. Well, today's topic is one that I think many people will be interested to follow along on. We're having a discussion today on defamation. Now, here in Saskatchewan, you think about word travels fast, whether it's a comment in a community Facebook group, a heated post on a local business website, a rumor that spreads through a small town. Reputations can be built or damaged in an instant. And in an age of social media, that line between free expression and defamation is getting thinner and more confusing. It doesn't have to be. We have experts that can help us pull this apart. What is protected speech in Canada? What crosses the line? Can that angry post or that harsh review that you put online, or even sharing a link or a rumor, can that get you in hot water? Joining me today to talk about this is Nathan Scrizzuti. Nathan is a lawyer at Cyferling Law in Saskatoon who has done work in defamation law. And I look forward to a great hour-long conversation with my guest, Nathan Scrizzuti, here today. And we, by the way, will welcome any text that you have as this conversation goes along. If you have a question, 1-877-332-8255. Nathan Scrizzuti, thank you so much for taking my call today, Nathan.
Morning, Evan. Happy to be here.
Great to have you on the phone. And before we even get into this, I would be remiss if I didn't point out the fact you're quite an accomplished rugby player, aren't you, Nathan?
I am, and I could take a guess who might have put you up to saying that.
Well, first, but, Carl Fix in Regina did let me know that you. So, what's going on? There's something coming up here regarding Columbia.
There is, yes. So I'm part of a rugby club from that takes players from all across Canada, led by Carl Fix, the Regina local himself. And we're headed to Columbia to play in an international sevens tournament. We have both a women's and a men's teams traveling, and we're taking players actually from all across Central and Southern America to join in with our Canadian contingent. So we're really looking forward to that later this week and next week.
Yeah, that'll be great. Well, good luck with that, and I'm glad I got you booked in before you took off for Columbia here today. So, you know, when we talk about defamation, I think it's safe to say there are a lot of people who have an idea in their mind what it is, but there are probably a lot of people that will point to something and say that's defamation of character when really it doesn't meet the legal qualification. So let's talk about what is defamation in Canadian law, Nathan.
Sure. So something interesting I noted in your introduction was that defamation is an umbrella term, right? Based on the old Saskatchewan Act, it was the Libel and Slander Act, which essentially meant libel written, slander spoken. Defamation is the umbrella term for both. And when you defame someone, you're essentially making a false statement that it has a negative effect on their reputation. And building from the English or British law, the idea is we're looking to both protect reputation while representing and protecting someone's freedom of expression. So defamation is you've breached the limit of your freedom of expression, and you're now harming someone's reputation.
So you said quickly that the new legislation in Saskatchewan is I believe taking over the old Libel and Slander Act. Is that right?
That is correct. So currently, we have the Libel and Slander Act in Saskatchewan, which was initially brought into force in 1909. And I'm sure we can all think of a couple things that didn't exist back then that do exist now. Just recently, this past month now, December 1st today, the Saskatchewan government introduced the Defamation Act, which is, amongst other things, intended to bring the statute or the law itself in line with what the courts have been dealing with on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis.
So I'm curious a couple of things on this, Nathan. Is number one, let's talk about what changes were made, because clearly there was a need for update if the old legislation takes us back to the early 1900s. What changes were made? And then I want to talk about what is the role of the province versus the federal government when it comes to the topic of defamation?
Sure. So maybe I'll start big and work my way small here. So an interesting comparison between, say, our Canadian federal government and the United States is that the Canadian federal government does not have any sort of defamation law itself, whereas in the United States they do. Our provincial governments generally handle defamation through statute, which is written laws, right? When you think about the civil law, or basically anything not criminal, you're looking at laws which are either developed through written documents by your government or through what we call the common law, which is essentially the decisions of judges, arbitrators, and other, we call them triers of fact, basically those who decide. When we talk about the necessity of updating our laws, and I wouldn't want anyone to think that currently on the books is the 1909 statute.
Sure.
It's been updated several times. But what the Saskatchewan government has communicated is that essentially they want to simplify so that people can understand, just any regular person can understand what they're looking at, and that the first step is getting rid of essentially that libel and slander portion and just calling it all defamation. That simplifies, makes it easier, straightforward to understand. And then more specifically, it creates a couple of specific ways that someone can seek the support of the court, not just through suing someone for what we'd call damages, or essentially for payment for the harm they've caused. Some specific ways that the government of Saskatchewan is looking to do that would be through the opportunity to sue not only for a single defamatory statement, but also the republication of the same material. So in social media, you've got sharing things on Facebook, retweeting things on X. This whole social media age is being grappled with in our courts, but they don't have any written law on the books from the government in order to actually have a direct route to a resolution. And I think quite importantly, this is also going to authorize the court to make what we'd call a takedown or a de-indexing order, which is against third parties that essentially tries to either cease or, as we know, once it's online, it's always online, at least deter further online circulation.
We're chatting today with Nathan Scrizzuti, who is a lawyer at Cipherling Law in Saskatoon, and we are talking about defamation. So I started off asking you, Nathan, what is defamation? Can I ask you this question? Because I think this will be the basis of probably the conversation for the rest of our segment here today is, what are the elements that need to be proven for someone to win a defamation case?
Sure. So there's three elements that are required. And I'm not going to get too deep into the case law itself, but this comes actually from a Supreme Court of Canada decision, Grant and Torstar, in 2009. Those three requirements are that the words themselves that are essentially being complained about are defamatory. And what defamatory means in this sense is that it would lower the reputation of the plaintiff in the eyes of any reasonable person. The second is that the words in fact referred to the plaintiff. This is an interesting one, because if you hear something negative but it doesn't say your name, it may still very well be defamatory, but you'll need to prove that you were the one being referred to. And finally, that the words were published. And this is a tricky word, because published for some may mean, oh, it's in a newspaper or perhaps an online article. But the intent of that word in this context is that it was just communicated to one person. If I were to say to you in private conversation something defamatory about a third party, that is, by technicality, defamation.
There's so many nuances to this. We're going to talk with Nathan for the next hour. We'll do this right until 11 o'clock. Again, Nathan Scrizzuti is my guest, a lawyer at Cipherling Law. We're talking about defamation. We'll get into some of the nuances, some of the context to this. And I mentioned earlier, I'm happy to take any questions you might have. You can text them into us, 1-877-332-8255. I will say, this is, I would present this as legal information. Please do not consider this legal advice. That's not what this is. If you have a particular case, you should be seeking legal counsel. But for the purposes of the discussion today, Nathan will provide some context to what we're talking about. We'll take our first break, and we will be back with Nathan Scrizzuti talking defamation here on the Roundtable of Justice. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right.
The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Welcome back to the Roundtable of Justice. Today, Nathan Scrizzuti is joining me. He's a lawyer at Cipherling Law in Saskatoon. We're talking about defamation. And just before the break, Nathan laid out the elements that would need to be proven in court, basically, to win a defamation case. The words are defamatory, so there is a loss of reputation as a result. The words infer to the plaintiff, and that the words were basically published for others to see. Am I to get that right, Nathan?
Very close. It doesn't even have to be for others to see. It's just something you say.
Okay. So is there, does intent matter? Like, is it possible that someone could be held liable even if they didn't mean harm to someone's reputation?
So there's an interesting balance there in the case law, and I think the important thing to highlight when it comes to intent in defamation is that the defamatory statement itself, there's not a necessity to prove that they intended to say something harmful. This is actually a specific difference from American law when it comes to their public figures. Of course, there are some big names in America right now who've spoken of defamation lawsuits. And as a public figure in America, you need to prove what they would call actual malice, whereas in Canada, that malice does not have to exist on the face of things.
Okay.
There is a specific defense to defamation where it's called innocent dissemination. Essentially, it's a defense by individuals or corporations that are distributing defamatory material, but they can't have created it. And they have to provide that they had no knowledge of the content and that they were not negligent in not knowing it was defamatory. So that's a very narrow and specific way to defend yourself from not intending to be defamatory. But in general, in order to say someone has defamed me, there doesn't have to be intent.
We're chatting today with Nathan Scrizzuti, who is a lawyer. We're talking about defamation, and I mentioned this already, but I'm going to probably do it a couple of more times. This is legal information. This is not legal advice. So if you have a particular situation that you feel one way or the other when it comes to defamation, and you are actually looking at this through the lens of maybe going to court, you should seek independent legal advice. Don't just say I heard on the Evan Bray Show that. Although Nathan, I do appreciate, I've got so many questions and there's a number coming in on the text line. Can we talk about a couple of cases that you think are significant, whether they're local or maybe they might be from somewhere else across Canada? Any cases that help build the case law around this?
Sure. And what I always like to start with when I talk about defamation law is we both have a very structured understanding of both how to prove defamation and how you can defend it. But then past that structure of proving and defending, it's anyone's guess what may ultimately be determined by a judge or a justice of the court. And one fantastic example of this is actually something they teach at the University of Saskatchewan Law School in their tort class, which is essentially civil law. They teach about a case, Whistler and Ruskin, from 1878. And because, of course, we are focused on the evolution of defamatory law from England, the question at hand is whether or not the reputation of an individual has been harmed and how that can be repaired in some way, and essentially through the payment of money from the person who made the statement to the person who was the subject of the statement. And because we're dealing with reputation, quite interestingly, this gentleman who sued was only awarded a farthing, which I understand to mean a quarter of a penny, because they already had a reputation that had been so sufficiently damaged by their own actions that there was no reputation to defend. So when it comes to defamation, that's an interesting thing to keep in mind, because that harm to reputation is very important when a judge or a justice is asked to calculate damages. Going back to my example to you earlier, where if I said something defamatory about a third party to you in private, that may not have a very significant effect or harm on that third party, even though it's still defamatory, and perhaps I don't have a defense for why I said it. A court may find that that statement is not worth very much in compensation. So that's my favorite case to kind of outline and structure the question of defamation. Earlier, I spoke about Grant and Torstar Corp, which is a 2009 Supreme Court of Canada decision. That decision is fantastic for essentially understanding how the court is currently looking at defamation. I also spoke about how we have written law through our government, right? Government of Saskatchewan transitioning the Libel and Slander Act to the Defamation Act. While that's happening just now, the courts have developed common law, essentially decisions which have led us into this new technological age where we have things like social media. News media is not just paper and print. So that's a very important case. If anyone wanted to just look up the key elements of an action for defamation, Grant and Torstar Corp, 2009 Supreme Court of Canada, that's the place to start. And then perhaps newer now is there's an opportunity for individuals to post either anonymously or under some sort of assumed name or username. And because of that, there's been a necessity to find out, well, how can I deal with someone defaming me if they're not actually putting their names forward as the individual making the statements? So because of that, courts have begun to rely on something called a Norwich order. It's from a case Norwich Pharmacal Co. and Commissioners of Customs and Excise. This is an older case, right? We didn't really have social media at the time, but it's been an order that's been adopted and almost adjusted by Canadian courts to have a legal answer or remedy to assist victims of defamation, which essentially allows them, through an order from the court, to obtain critical information from an innocent third party, like an internet service provider, social media platform, maybe even a bank, to identify who's actually behind the screen making those defamatory comments. So that's a very important tool, especially as people tend to be more confident when they're speaking from behind a screen, and even more so and more brazen if they're doing so under an assumed name or an anonymous title.
Right. Okay. We have got lots left here. Nathan Scrizzuti is my guest. He's a lawyer at Cipherling Law in Saskatoon. We're talking about defamation. The texts are coming in fast and furious, so we're going to reload with some questions. There's some great what-if questions, because a lot of it's got to do with social media, and I would suggest that's probably one of the areas that people might not even realize, the landmines that are out there. We'll talk a little bit more, and we'll get some real-life examples. Does it or doesn't it fall into the category of defamation with my guest when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Welcome back to the Roundtable of Justice. Today we are talking about defamation and what that legislation looks like, what the elements are that you need to prove for someone to win a defamation case. Where we haven't gone yet is what some of the defenses are, the protections you have against a defamation suit. We're chatting today with Nathan Scrizzuti. Nathan is a lawyer with Cipherling Law in Saskatoon. You're a young guy, Nathan. I'm assuming you're on various social media platforms. Is this more prevalent than people think? Like, do you read through social media as with the lawyer mind going, oh, that's defamation, oh, that's defamation? Or is the threshold higher than that?
Well, I think the funny thing about defamation is that people might understand defamation just from hearing the phrase is, oh, if someone said that I defamed them, I can say, oh, well, actually it was the truth, so it's not defamation. But that doesn't quite specifically cover it, because when it comes to defamation, we talked about how you have those three steps to prove you've been defamed. When it comes to the defenses to defamation, that doesn't cancel the defamation itself. It's just a defense for you as to why you said the defamatory thing. So you guessed right. I am on a few apps on my phone here and there. But when I'm scrolling through, I frankly, you're going to see a lot of defamatory statements. The real question becomes, are those defamatory statements defensible?
Right. So let's talk about what are some of the protections that are in place for people against a defamation suit.
Certainly. So there's a few, what I think of these as general headings for how someone could seek to defend themselves. And it could be based on a few of these headings. But the number one and absolute best defense, if you have been threatened with a defamation lawsuit, or if you're concerned about a statement you've made that's not particularly positive in the light of who you were making that statement of, if it was the truth, substantially true, it's considered an absolute defense. There can be no defamation if you can prove those words to be accurate. So if you know that you're telling the truth, that's a great defense.
Okay.
Other defenses include fair comment. You asked me, I believe over the break, about if someone is sharing an opinion, or if they say, in my opinion, at the start of a short or lengthy statement. The question here is that whether the entire statement can be recognizable as opinion. If you say, I think this because of this, that's generally recognizable as an opinion, because you're saying, I have gathered information, truthful or not, and based on that information from other parties, I believe this to be the case, or I'm making this statement as my opinion. Again, there's questions about whether or not you have malicious intent in that, right? You're seeking to directly harm the person. Again, while it doesn't have to be proven for defamation, that could be a question for the court to consider, whether or not you were seeking to harm someone.
Right.
Another one would be responsible communication, which protects publication. So now we're talking about the actual news media, right, which you can't see on Facebook anymore. But if there's responsible communication, which is looking to share matters of public interest, right, the journalist or the newspaper or whoever runs the Just Bins account is sharing that with the interest of sharing the public interest, then that could be a defense. Not always.
So that actually makes me, can I just jump in for a second,
yeah,
Nathan? Because it makes me think of a question I got from Clinton Lumsden. You were talking about responsible communication. So Clint is asking the question, and I don't know if you saw this, but BBC recently was in the crosshairs of Donald Trump because they took elements of his speech back from January 6th, and they basically omitted parts of it, and they blended it together to make it sound like he was saying something that he wasn't. They took it, purposefully edited it to take it out of context. Would that be considered then something that could potentially form the case for a defamation suit?
Well, I want to just asterisk this with, as a public figure in America, Donald Trump has a higher bar he has to reach to prove defamation under American law. But if we look back to those three things required for a defamation action, were the impugned words defamatory in the sense that they would lower the plaintiff's reputation? Well, they are his words, however, they've been modified or adjusted. And of course, it very well is the case that they were looking to lower the reputation of Donald Trump in the eyes of a reasonable person. That may be a difficult hurdle to overcome at that phase if we're, again, shifting this to Canadian law. Were the words, in fact, referring to the plaintiff? This is an interesting one, too, because BBC, from what I understand, used his own words. They just rearranged them. And then finally, that the words were published, this is the easy one for Donald Trump to prove, because the BBC is a very well-known media outlet. Clearly, the words were published in probably several forms or fashions. Unfortunately, I've made it this far without having to say it depends, but I'll give you your first it depends today.
Actually, I'm going to call that a win, Nathan, because for a lawyer to make it over half an hour on a radio program without saying that is probably a record.
Well, I'm trying my best, but I do, I would say he's got an uphill battle. But never say never.
Right. Nathan Scrizzuti is my guest, a lawyer at Cyferling Law in Saskatoon. So the questions are rolling in on the text line. And now that you've laid out some of the defenses, the protections that people have on a defamation suit that could come their way, I'm going to throw a couple of these out. So, you know, Diane asked the question, she just had a bad meal at a restaurant. It was terrible. She went online and left a very negative review, but it was based on her experience. That clearly then would be defensible if a defamation suit was brought about.
I would agree. Again, nothing's ever 100%. What I'd point out, though, is when you are talking about or sharing something that could be determined to be defamatory against a corporation, you want to make sure that you understand that an attack on the products or services of a company, so like the meal at this restaurant, is only defamatory if it's attacking the integrity, competence, or other reputational value of the business. So it's not actually defamatory if your review says, I went to the restaurant for a meal, I did not enjoy the meal, here's the reasons why. While it could be considered having an effect on the reputational value of the business, you're specifically speaking to essentially a product or a service of the business. I would feel quite comfortable knowing that I wouldn't be receiving any sort of threatening or demanding letter from the business on your review. Reviews are a very important way that people can share their experiences with businesses and perhaps personal corporations. It doesn't stop someone from alleging defamation, and that's the interesting thing about our legal system, is you can allege what you'd like to allege, and then of course then you would have a duty to defend it. So if you never want to hear about being threatened with defamation, the only absolutely safe route is to not leave the review, but I would feel very comfortable in being safe and protected in leaving a review like that.
So there's a couple of questions coming in kind of around the thing you just talked about there, but I noticed Scott in Lumsden said, is defamation the same whether it's applied to an entity, a company, or a person?
So defamation can be against any of those different kind of categories, but you do look at a company or an entity somewhat differently, because you need to look at whether or not you're attacking, again, the integrity, competence, or other reputational value of the business. If it's a business that produces a product and you leave a review on the product itself, that wouldn't necessarily be found to be defamatory in the first place.
Okay. Here's another quick question I'm going to throw in before our next break is, can reporting a professional to their governing body open you up to defamation? So I'm guessing like a doctor to the physician's board, a lawyer to the law society, those types of things.
So there's been a good series of case law on this, and I am noting you said quick answer. So my quick answer is essentially, could it be found to be defamatory? Yes, it could be found to be defamatory. However, there are specific defenses to someone seeking to, in good faith, report someone, and that comes under what we would call privilege, right? It's a statement made in certain settings where freedom of expression is important, like court proceedings themselves, or perhaps you're dealing with a legal, moral, or social duty, like reporting someone to a professional society.
Okay. We are going to take our last break. We've got one more segment with Nathan Scrizzuti, who is our guest today, a lawyer at Cyferling Law. We're talking about defamation. Great questions coming in. I've got a few more as well. Curious, when you made the comment about Donald Trump being a public figure and the threshold, maybe the standard might be a little bit different. I want to talk about that when we're talking about politicians or celebrities. When we come back here on the Roundtable of Justice, you're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
The Evan Bray Show, the Roundtable of Justice.
My guest today on the Roundtable is Nathan Scrizzuti, who is a lawyer at Cyferling Law in Saskatoon. We're talking about defamation. Nathan, you'd made a comment about when we were talking about Donald Trump saying, you know, maybe the threshold's a little different given who he is and his status. Is that the case? Are public figures, are politicians, journalists, celebrities, are they treated differently under defamation law?
Which is the easiest answer. No. They aren't. Everyone has a reputation that they would like to uphold, and that's people, enterprises, and corporations. So there's no different treatment when it comes to whether or not they can they need a higher standard of proof. When it comes to public figures in the states, under their federal law, there is a higher standard. They need to prove actual malice. Essentially, someone is intending to harm the individual based on their statements. So it's much more difficult as a public figure in the United States to prove defamation. However, in Canada, it's not.
Okay. A few more questions I wanted to get to on the line. I've got one here from Jacob. He's wanting to know. So essentially, I'm going to summarize his text. It's fairly long. But if he reposts something or shares something and the original post is through a court process found to be defamatory, what are the repercussions on him? Like in some cases, as he points out, you could have a tweet that's been reshared a million times. Is everyone liable for that? Or what does the court order look like coming from that?
So there's actually I say relatively recent here, but a 2011 case, again from the Supreme Court of Canada, called Crooks and Newton. And in that case, they were dealing with something very similar. It was retweeting or sharing articles based on the example you just gave, that were found to be defamatory. But the decision of the Supreme Court of Canada was essentially that there's a two-step consideration. The first one is, are you directly retweeting or sharing the defamatory statement, or are you retweeting or sharing perhaps a hyperlink, basically a link to another, a third-party page, a third-party comment? If you're hyperlinking, you don't have control of what the person may find if they click on that, so it's not going to be something that you're liable for. So that's the first side of things. Now, if you saw something and you just hit retweet or you shared it without any further comment, et cetera, it's that person's statement, the third party's statement, that's going to be the defamatory statement. But you may have, or you hopefully or likely have, again, turning back to our defenses, the defense of fair comment, right? Or essentially the defense of innocent dissemination, which we talked about much earlier on today. An individual is distributing defamatory material, but they didn't create it. They had no knowledge of the content being defamatory, or they were not negligent in knowing that it was defamatory. So you can probably merge and mix some of those defenses to be okay. The interesting thing, and I guess circling us back to perhaps one of the main reasons we're talking about defamation today, is that part of the new Defamation Act is that opportunity for the court to order either the cessation of the circulation of a defamatory statement online, or at least make orders to de-index or take down those posts or those defamatory statements to the actual corporations that handle the social media platform, right? So that's actually getting answered in some form or fashion, but the idea, of course, is if you're sharing something and you believe it to be true, you might be okay. If you're sharing something and you don't understand it to be defamatory, you might be okay. Best thing to always do is if you're gonna circulate something around, make sure you know what you're talking about.
Right.
Do a little bit of research.
I'm going to squeeze in one more question we've only got about a minute left, Nathan. But the question essentially is, if you know the author of the post, even though what they're saying is defamatory, but you know this person, well, the texter says is crazy, is that a defense for them?
So if the individual themselves,
like the person who's saying the disparaging comments about Premier Scott Moe, is clearly, if you look at all of the feed that he's got on his Facebook page, like this guy's a little off center, is that negate a defamatory suit?
I wouldn't say it. You've gotten me with a second. It depends for our second. For one, only one next time.
Okay.
It's going to depend. If the person believes it to be true and it's an opinion, they could have the defense of fair comment.
Right.
Right. Because they have that ultimate belief that what they're saying is true.
Sure.
However, based on however they're doing in their own personal lives, if you're making defamatory statements, you're making yourself liable to to some sort of response.
Well, as I said, this has all been legal information, not legal advice. So if you do have a specific case, I would encourage you to get independent legal advice. But Nathan, this has been great. The hour flew by. We had tons of questions that came in. I appreciate you giving us some time today.
Well, thank you so very much. It was a pleasure to chat with you.
Yeah, and good luck with the rugby in Colombia, by the way.
I'll try and stay out of harm's way.
Good stuff. Nathan Scrizzuti, lawyer with Cipherling Law. Great conversation on defamation. A couple of people with a text saying, I missed the first half of this. You can always go back and listen to it on our website or wherever you get your podcast. The full hour Roundtable of Justice will be there for you. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.